Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes.
Conversation and also part of the Journalist Patriot Journalist Network. And if you are a Facebook user, you can find the Patriot Journalist Network just by going to your search engine and typing in Patriot Journalist Network as one word. And you can find this show as well as Mark Prasik's show, which is Full Armor, which is a very interesting live video chat. I suggest folks go check that out. They've got been doing some good things over there, and we will be featuring Mark Prasik's show at some point in the future, probably after the election, which is only a few weeks away. And I'd like to take this time to thank everyone, whether you've come from Blog Talk Radio or if you are coming from and listening, I should say, listening from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, as well as the other venues that we can be listened to. Now, also, about go back a little bit for the Full Armor Show. You can find that Monday through Friday from 8 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time. Now, what we are going to talk about tonight is 28 good questions that the media should be asking but isn't. And on the line here, I have two of the Bard's Logic Political Talks panel on the line, and that is Kelly Mordecai, who, of course, is the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch. You could also find his website of the same name. And also, there is Chris, who heads up the Coalition of Freedom page on Facebook. So without further ado, I will be letting in Chris and Kelly. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in tonight.
Hey, buddy.
Well, hey, Robert. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Good, good. And happy Sunday. Sunday. Yes, Kelly, I know you had some updates that you wanted to share before we get into the topic of this evening. So why don't I hand over the mic to you so you can fill us in on what's going on.
Okay, well, yeah, thanks, Robert. let's see. You know, I mentioned about the complaints to grand juries in California, so we could ask the grand jury walk into the election clerk the day after the election, count the ballots. We've got three in already, Siskiyou County, Sacramento County, L.A. County, and tomorrow there'll be three more for sure going in. There'll be Monterey County, El Dorado County, and Riverside County. Hopefully, as the word spreads, we'll get a lot more in, so that's pretty exciting. That's one grand jury thing. I mean, we need to have an honest election. And by the way, there's some high-power players in this monitor the election, electronic election fraud game. Some people I'd like to introduce to be on your show one of these days, they would give us all an earful. I've kind of mentioned a little bit about electronic election fraud, but these guys are they've been at it a lot longer than I have. But, so I'll connect you with those good people. Other grand jury thing that's happening, there's a young lady named Leah Plant. She was an occupier up in Oregon near the Portland area. And she was before a grand jury, and she would not answer the questions posed. So it appears that the grand jury threw in a slammer for remaining silent. In other words, you won't ask her questions, you're going to go to jail. Actually, the grand jury has this power, but what happens, there's a lot more to it than that. And by the way, she did get released. But a lot of people are outraged. I'm seeing, boycott grand jury abuse, all sorts of stories that make the grand jury look bad. However, the way it really works, it's kind of an interesting twist. I put it on my website, the very last page at the bottom. It explains how this can happen and who is really responsible. Well, typically when you have a witness, as a witness before a grand jury, your Fifth Amendment rights do not apply. I'll say that again, as a witness. If you're the accused, of course, your Fifth Amendment applies. And when you're trying to, like with some kingpin drug dealers, you want to, work with the little guys to see if they'll tell who the big people are and whatever, or big murders or whatever. Witnesses are asked to, hey, tell us what's going on, or ultimately you can go to jail. So how it works is the district attorney is asking the questions typically before the grand jury, and the witness has just refused to answer. So the DA or sometimes the grand jury foreman will go to a judge and say, hey, we're not getting cooperation from this witness. Well, then the judge will say, hey, I'll go ahead and grant immunity and then order that the questions be answered. Immunity is where whatever you say in front of the grand jury will not be used against you. It's called immunity. So once a person is given immunity as a witness, they immediately are told, yeah, now you're going to answer the questions. If you don't, you go to jail. It's actually contempt of court. It's not grand jury doing this. It's the although a grand jury can request it. Typically, it's the DA who takes it to the judge. It's the judge who orders it. So I wanted to kind of clear that up. There was a posting that I got, and people are all really upset with the grand jury. I'm like, no. It's probably the DA hiding behind the grand jury. So on my Facebook, Kelly Z. Mordecai, on my Facebook is this image of Leah, and she looks like a sweet, innocent teenager holding a little puppy dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and what it says is, for exercising her right to remain silent in front of a secretive grand jury, Leah was jailed. Silence is not a crime. The right to disagree with the state is a fundamental constituent of a free society. Please help share this message. Google Leah Plant and grand jury resistors. And, of course, I know better, so I crossed out grand jury with the red lines, and then I put on there district attorney. In other words, it reads Google Leah Plant and district attorney resistors. So a district attorney is probably really at fault about this whole scenario, and he has to hide behind the grand jury. Why? Because the public finds out the district attorney did this, went to the judge, got the order, and asked the question again before the grand jury. What's going to happen is the district attorney is not going to get reelected. It's ugly for the district attorney. So I think he's hiding behind the grand jury. And then typically you're in a grand jury situation like this, you're just sitting and watching. And when it comes down to it, you're asked whether you're going to indict or not. The grand jury members are just kind of watching the show, doing a rubber stamp for an indictment for the DA. But in actuality, very few grand jury members know. They don't know much about their power because it's been hidden from us. But number two, they don't know that they can go to a judge to get immunity and require the witness to answer the question. And, you know, of course, my heart bleeds a little bit for Leah, what she had to go through, because if she was in a situation where she could have received retaliation for becoming a witness, then the district attorney could have and should have offered her a witness protection. And obviously gangs need this, people trying to get out and they're a witness, they need witness protection. Well, if the DA didn't offer witness protection, and the DA just hastily went to a judge, that is a total unprofessional way to handle a situation like this. And if I was a judge in Leah's situation, before I would grant the immunity, spill the beans, you're going to jail, order, I would have told, I would have asked, ordered really, being a judge, would have ordered the district attorney, Leah, a public defender, into my chambers to keep this all private to protect her, and I'd say, hey, look, honey, do you need witness protection? Because maybe that's why you're not talking. Do you need witness protection?
Hey, Kelly, could you give and you may not be able to because of the nature of the case, but would you be able to give a little background on why she's on the witness stand in the first place?
Oh, it was an occupier, something. I didn't get into the greatest details, but it was something with the Occupy. They've had problems even in Florida, of course, now in Oakland. They're saying sanitary conditions like in Oakland. The city governments just kind of don't like all these people hanging out. But we do have a right to assemble. We do have the right to petition, or at least we used to. But anyway, there's arrests being made, and it's just kind of strange. But I didn't have time to elaborate because I knew it would take a lot of time to explain and write up on my website how this really works. Because it's really, the important point I want to make, I mean, yes, empathy is for Leah if the judge and the DA weren't a little bit more careful with her situation before putting her in jail for not answering the question. But there's a couple things I wanted to point out. that's absolutely necessary for this power. And by the way, in a regular court trial, in front of a petit jury, the judge can order a witness, yeah, you're going to answer that question. This is a trial. You're going to answer it. If you don't, we're going to throw you in a slammer. It's called contempt of court. So this is not, it's not uncommon, but it's not, well, it's uncommon, but it's not impossible. This does happen on rare occasion when they need the testimony of a witness. So anyway, that's one thing. But the other thing is, imagine this power, all right? What happened to Leah, this sweet-looking teenager, unless she looks like a teenager, this sweet-looking girl won't answer the questions as a witness. She goes off to jail. Imagine if the grand jury has this power to investigate corrupt government officials.
That'd be all of them, right?
Pretty much, but you have people around, say a politician or a corrupt DA or corrupt whoever, you know, way up politically elected. You got secretaries, you've got staff, you got chief of staff, you got a whole bunch of people around you, and if this power doesn't exist, we may never find out the truth. In the Watergate Nixon situation, the Watergate boys spilled the beans because they too were subject to this power, and they started answering, spilling the beans. It went up the chain of command. Chuck Colson, who was at the time second to the president, started answering questions. But it was found out that some of the Watergate boys actually perjured themselves in front of a grand jury, and several of them went to jail for perjury before a grand jury because they were trying not to answer the question. So it turned out the people around, all the president's men, you know, the staff, secretaries, whoever, they got the subpoena. They said, no, this is what you did, and here's a letter they wrote, and pretty much those guys went to jail. So what happens with this great power of a judge ordering immunity / now answer the question, is that the grand jury has the power to pierce the silence of witnesses witnessing corruption.
Wow.
Can you, Kelly? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, your question might be shorter, but if Kelly can, just for everybody's enlightenment, can you explain the grand jury and what it is so people understand it?
Well, the grand jury is just everyday people sitting as jurors looking at evidence.
What makes them grand?
Well, what makes them grand is they can go after government officials. They can investigate willful misconduct in office by public officials. They hold our government to account.
They're pulled together like somebody, if somebody files a case, and the court, the DA, somebody, you walk into a court and you file a case and you have all this evidence. And then the court looks at the case and says, hey, we have something to go on, and they convene a jury. Is that how that works?
Yeah, people get a jury summons. They might think, oh, I'm going to be on a trial by jury with this petit jury, 12. But they show up and they're like, we want you to be on a grand jury. There's 19 members, and you're going to be one of them. Oh, okay, what do? Just sit and listen and see if somebody needs to be indicted, like either a street criminal or a government criminal. So the grand jury listens, and if they know their power, they can start the initiation. I mean, they can start initiating things themselves, directing the district attorney, hey, you need to get busy on this and that. And in some states, they can even ask questions directly of witnesses or the accused. So it's a very powerful way to investigate. And the Missouri Constitution, Article 1, Section 16, talks about the grand jury. It says that the grand jury power to investigate willful misconduct in office by public officers and to bring indictments in connection therewith shall never be suspended. And so what that means is that the people, when they're grand jury members, they have the power to investigate government agents, find out if they've done something wrong, and throw them in the slammer. Of course, my book has a whole bunch of county, state, and federal people who have went to jail and are indicted by grand juries, and that you can, in fact, submit a complaint. And so it has enormous power if we know our power. And we can even tell the district attorney, hey, look, you know what? With this Leah Platt situation, you know what? We just found out that you didn't seek witness protection for her. Now get out of your office. Get out of our chambers right now. We're in charge. There's a California Penal Code that talks about this. Get out. We're going to discuss whether you did something like malfeasance, misfeasance, or nonfeasance. In my county in 1988, the district attorney was actually indicted for malfeasance, misfeasance, nonfeasance when child abusers were being let off left and right. So it's citizens, and we have this sacred duty to be watching over our government, and that's one way, is either submitting a complaint or being on a grand jury. And this is just an example of the Leah Platt situation. It's just an example. If you're a witness, you're not answering a question, the grand jury can order the judge and then go to jail. Or the district attorney will work with the judge. Probably in this case, the DA did it. So it's very powerful. And remember Susan McDowell, Clinton Whitewater situation? I know that was a while back, but she was a business partner to Bill Clinton, and the grand jury was investigating the Whitewater mess.
Oh, right, Whitewater.
Yeah, Whitewater. So Susan McDowell refused to answer questions posed by the grand jury, and so the federal prosecutors, whoever it was, whether it's the grand jury foreman or whether it was the federal attorney, they worked with the judge. They granted her immunity. Now you're going to answer the question. She still said no. Okay, off to jail you go. She spent 18 months behind bars because she wouldn't answer questions about her business dealing with Clinton.
And did she ever do anything?
Well, they let her out after 18 months. Now the end.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. I think she just kept it. Nothing came of it from there. I think she kept it silent the whole time.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Paid her some good money.
Yeah, probably a lot of money for just 18, not just, I mean, 18 months in prison. That's going to be horrible. But if someone said, hey, look, I'd give you $1 million, you're just going to spend a year and a half in prison. I'd be like, maybe I'm able to keep my mouth shut, you know.
Well, the other part of it, too, is that she might have ended up dead if she said anything. And even witness protection may not have been able to protect her. So,
yeah, that's a good point, too.
Yeah, but there is a distinction between Susan McDowell's situation and the Whitewater, or the Watergate boys. Watergate boys, of course, were all men, and, well, they spilled the beans. They didn't go to jail for not answering questions. Now, I wonder why that is that a woman was willing to go to jail and remain silent versus a man. Well, it comes down to something real simple. In jail, well, a woman with the potential of going to jail, she's not afraid to drop the soap.
Oh, jeez. Well, I think this topic is a good segue into one of our, and you mentioned, she's this young lady, is a good segue to one of the questions that the mainstream media, or actually no media probably, because I don't hear anything from the so-called conservative media either covering something like this, and that is, why are so many young people being arrested? Should we be concerned that 41% of all Americans have been arrested by the time they reach the age of 23? Well, I find that, I find that number incredible.
41%.
Let's say 41% of all Americans have been arrested by the time they reach the age of 23. Now, that's incredible. Personally, I don't know anybody who's been arrested. Well, no, it can't be true. That's not true, though. I mean, nothing for, a crime or anything like that. I guess there's, I knew one person who got arrested for unpaid parking tickets. But beyond that,
I would imagine
know anyone.
without looking at the statistics behind that, I would imagine that that has a lot to do, I would assume, to do with drugs. And I don't know if you guys watched the Judge Gray, who is Gary Johnson's running mate. He had a great, one of those online town hall kind of things, where he was talking about the numbers of arrests around, you know, recreational drug use was like 860,000 people a year, nonviolent, what they call non-victim crime. It's huge in this country. And I remember, I never went back and finished watching it. I never have a time to follow up on half the things that I would like to, you know, but not that I'm, you know, for legalizing drugs or anything. That's not the point. The point is just the statistic was just mind-boggling, and the numbers of people that are in prisons. I guess I don't remember, what was it, today when I was breaking down the third-party responses to the second debate, Rocky said that that we have more incarcerations or more people in our prisons per capita than any country in the world. I'm like, I mean, it's just amazing the stuff you find, you know, while you're researching something else. You know.
Well,
Kelly, why did you get in? Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Chris. You got a question.
Well, I was just going to ask, why, Kelly, did you get into this grand, why have you become the resident online expert and write a book around the grand jury stuff? What got you here? Kelly. Did we lose him again?
Did we lose you, Kelly? Yep, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you get a bad line. I tell you what, I think he's in California or something like that.
He's in Northern California.
No, he's not too far from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, 10 hours.
There. I'm sorry, I was muted.
Oh, there he is.
Okay. Yeah, here, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I'm going to answer that question. What got me into the grand jury? What can we do? Okay, I am so tired of conspiracy theories. I don't want to hear another one unless you have a solution. I read a few of them. Yeah, some might be true, some not. Some of them help a person understand the Democrat or Republican model doesn't work. Certainly, like the creature from Jekyll Island on monetary, you know, Federal Reserve law stuff. But where is the solution? Other than, okay, you get angry. Well, I want to do something. Well, the grand jury is something we can do. We can file complaints. We can get on it. And one of the reasons why we've had such a high to add to this, incarcerations per capita, well, it's the highest percentage in the world. We also have the hardest system in the world, in which all the hoops, all the codes, people have to. It's really hard to actually convict and sentence someone to jail because of due process and all this stuff. But we still have the highest percentage. What is wrong? What I've discovered is, of course, we have excessive laws, but number two, the main reason why this has happened is because the American people do not understand their power as petit jury members. That's the 12, all have to agree, or you have a hung jury. They don't understand the power of jury nullification. And number two, their power as grand jury members that they can say, look, I'm just not going to indict this person. When you do not understand these powers, you're still going to get, the citizen is just going to go right along with some legal scholar, or they perceive him as a legal scholar, meaning the DA. The DA would abuse a grand jury for a rubber stamp for an indictment. But when we know our power, we can actually step back and we can start overturning laws. The French actually did this in the early 1800s. The grand juries wouldn't indict, the petit juries would not convict. And it was a big transformation because it started undoing the harsh Napoleonic law, which, you know, for example, you steal something, you get your finger cut off. This was too harsh. Grand juries were not indicting. Private juries were not convicting. Finally, the French government says, well, we've got to repeal a bunch of these laws because they can't be enforced. The people will not convict. And we have lost this glorious knowledge of jury nullification, as well as being a grand jury, you can nullify by saying, I'm just not indicting. But a guy, a libertarian in Texas, he was on a grand jury, and they kept bringing cases where people
they weren't selling, they were buying and doing drugs. He just refused to indict him. He's only hurt himself, guys. Come on. We have this power. Let's just, you know, he's got a drug problem. That's his problem. It's not the state's problem. So there are so many other laws. And the end conclusion that I came to in my book is ever since 1946, our federal government has grown exponentially, meaning not a straight line, but more than a straight line upward in regulations, codes, etc. Well, I wrote that, and it's because of the 1946 Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which tried to deceive the grand jury out of its power. And when I met Roger Ruth, he's an attorney who studied well the grand jury. I cited him in my book. He wrote in the Creighton Law Review, if it's not a runaway grand jury, it's not a real grand jury. When, in my meeting with Roger Ruth, he said, before I said it, he said this, the federal government has grown exponentially ever since the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure passed in 1946.
What was it called again, Kelly?
The Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. It's Rule 6 and Rule 7, which by deception, because the court, the Supreme Court has spoken the opposite, by deception, grand jury members are deceived out of their power. And it's very frustrating. And he said it, too. He said the federal government has grown exponentially since 1946. We have had a break in New Hampshire recently, whereas legislation has brought forth the right of the defense attorney to inform the petit jury, the defense attorney may now describe to the jury jury nullification. And in other circles, what happens is if you're in a court and you start talking about jury nullification, say you're the defense or the accused or even a witness, the judge will shut you up. Could you imagine the American people realizing that, look, you know, I'm a juror. This is a bogus law. Not guilty. Not guilty. Jury nullification is on the website, too, by the way. Supreme Court Justices Harlan Stone, he said the law itself is on trial just as much as it caused to be decided. And because the American people have forgotten both of these great powers, government is just running right over us, deceiving juries to do the will of the government when we have the hardest system to convict a criminal in, or I should say the accused. It's a lack of information that I wish the American people would get on. And luckily, FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Association, is working day and night to inform people of the power of jury nullification.
This is some heavy stuff. Well, I think
real quick, Chris, someone in the chat asked where we got the numbers from the 41% of America adolescents and young adults have been arrested at least once. That was something ABC News. Oh, you're looking that up as well.
Tell them to look it up on Google.
Yeah,
busy
so put
talking.
A link in the chat. Go ahead, guys.
Well, I have seen it elsewhere, you know, the prison industrial complex, you know. Other people have done reports on this stuff, and we are the highest incarceration rate per capita anywhere in the world. I'm like, what? I've seen that elsewhere. But what happens is the accused is so scared that they will do a plea bargain. And the way DAs work is that, well, look, you know, when we investigated, we found this. We started with 3 charges against you. Now we're up to 9. I tell you what, we'll drop it down to 2. You'll serve 30 days for this, and you're on parole for 2 years if you do a plea bargain with us.
Yep. Oh, how many people, just think about your lifetime of people you've known in your life or even your own personal situations where you've heard that. I mean, everybody goes through that. They come at you with multiple charges. You got an attorney that's going to cost you $400 to $600 an hour to keep you out of prison, and what do? You know, you can't afford it. It's a money thing. You can't afford, you know, so they come in, they just wheel and deal all day long, I mean, we've seen movies about this stuff, you know.
Right, and what's really frustrating, some states like Iowa and Texas, for a felony, they cannot proceed without a grand jury indictment. What does that mean? If members of the grand jury say, look, we're not indicting this person, guess what? Your attorney's fees are over. Done. Zero. Grand jury doesn't indict, there's
really?
No more, it's over.
Yeah.
So Iowa and Texas will not indict without a grand jury.
Well, Texas is actually following the statutes on that. Iowa, not so. In California, the DA can use a grand jury for a felony, or he can just go to the judge and get an indictment, have the guy arrested, and start the trial, skip the grand jury process.
For exponential reasons?
It's just the way the statutes are in the state. So,
you
know,
said
1946. And,
yeah, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I'll say this again. The French repealed a lot of their harsh laws due to the use of the grand jury not indicting or trial by jury not convicting. They had to rewrite the laws. I mean, a government can pass endless laws, all right?
Yeah,
if
they
can't
do
it. Enforce them, what's the point?
And I think that brings us to another question that's on here I found interesting. I've got a couple reasons why I think is the case, and this, I think this ties in. And it says also, it says, how did we, and they're talking about the United States, how did we get to the point where sex trafficking is now at epidemic levels all over the United States?
They can afford attorneys.
That's a scary thought, Chris, but you might be right.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, come on. How many times in our lifetime in America, and there's supposed to be this, you know, the rule of law country, you know, where everybody's safe, you know, and supposed to be the best country to live in the face of the earth, and yet we all, I think if you talked, if you pulled, you know, took 1,000 people and polled them and asked them if they thought this was a just country, if they thought it was safe, you know, to live in your own home in this country, that if they thought politicians were working for us against this, if they thought the police were honest and followed the laws or the courts, I bet you America would get a pretty dark mark. Wrong?
Well, you would have two types of categories. Those who've never been in jail, never been under investigation, that's your one category. Your good, honest citizens are probably going to say, yeah, we're really just. And then you got those who've been through the system, maybe once in and out of jail, and the stories I've heard, people, they're just frustrated. I mean, they have to hire an attorney. Oh, you get a public defender. Well, that's real nice. Local story here, they only had like 10 hours. That's all that the public defender could devote to the case.
So it's all plea bargain. It's all plea bargaining.
Yeah, it's justice by negotiation. Now, we go back to, let's take a time machine back to the 1700s, all right? There really wasn't many district attorneys. It was the grand jury working with the judge. Once the person was indicted, they'd take it to trial by jury. And the jury, in the petit jury, the trial foreman basically ran the show. There wasn't many DAs. And Mark Adams, who spoke at the Judicial Reform Conference at Rice University, he's an attorney, he said this: if we could get the grand juries back to where they were in colonial days, we would turn this country around overnight. We have a legal system, it's scary to say, but it is a business. And even talking to many attorneys, they don't know about grand juries. They don't know that you can request for a witness or the accused, particularly the accused, to appear before a grand jury. I helped somebody up in Washington. He was selling natural supplements. The feds, FDA was coming after him. They violated their own steps. They just turned it over to a federal attorney. He found out that the grand jury is working to indict him from a friend who appeared as a witness under subpoena. So I helped him a little bit, but he wrote this killer You know, Mr. Federal Attorney, I want to appear before the grand jury myself. I want to tell my side of the story. Well, guess what? He's not been indicted yet. He probably won't be. Do you know you have the power, if you find out you're under investigation, you can request to be before a grand jury and tell your side of the story? So that
true in all 50 states?
You have to work through a judge, most likely, because you can file your side of the story with the district attorney who's supposed to share this with the grand jury. He probably won't, so then you have to go to a judge and get a court order. Says, Your Honor, I want to tell my side of the story before the grand jury. This district attorney is not allowing this. This is a petition for redress of grievance protected under the First Amendment. And so I would like to get in front of the grand jury and tell my side of the story before I get indicted, and then I got to spend tens of thousands of dollars to prove my innocence. We have lost this knowledge. Thomas Jefferson summarized it brilliantly in a letter to Thomas Paine of July 2nd, 1789. He said this, I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its Constitution. And the principles of the Constitution are obviously liberty, government, yeah, we need to help some, but stay off of our backs. If government can pass and enforce endless laws, we have what we have now.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane. I mean, how many laws and rules have been broken in this primary across this country? People can't even, you can't even get a legitimate primary election. I mean, you just,
right,
the
right.
stuff that we've seen, you know. Go ahead.
Right, but two things, and you know, I like the two questions that we put out here, you know, from the list that we have here, Chris. You know, I like to.
Elaborate
more.
Highlight them. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can bring them up. Yeah, the first one that they were talking about is discussing why so many young people are being arrested and should we be concerned? And of course, I think we should. That 41% of all Americans have been arrested by the time they reach. That sounds incredible to me. By the time they reach the age 23.
Which
that's
number was
one.
That question? Can you call?
That's
out
number
the 22.
Yeah, 22.
That helps me so I can track with you. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get down. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to bring them out through, you know, as they become relevant to the conversation.
I mean, you studied them.
Well, complimenting on this a little bit more, commenting. A buddy from Baltimore, he moved to Iowa. I met him at college at Iowa State. In Baltimore, you weren't a man. You're considered a man unless you had been in jail by the time you were 18, and it was like over 60% had been in jail. I mean, it was, you know, inner city mentality.
Sure.
You know. I don't know.
Well, do you think, you know, I think a lot of folks are talking, well, you know, talk about, and I think it's goes the same with the next question we'll cover, is, you know, with the economy, and you know, there's just a lot more younger folks doing crime as well.
Well, I've often wondered, you know, when you talk about, and not to bring up the war on drugs, but that's popped into my head, but when you bring up, you look at any cultural time, any decade in our society, and you see something that's the hot button for the government of that era. You know, it just seems like, depending on who's in power, depending on what atrocities that the media has stirred the common folks up to, and then the pressure that's put on the politicians, and then all of a sudden that's the issue of the decade. You follow what I'm getting at when I'm saying that?
Yeah,
and then they gear up all of the resources, you know, the courts, the police, you know, the lawyers. They drool because they realize they're going to make a lot of money on this issue this decade. I mean, it's almost absolutely insane. I mean, I don't know what our gross national product of our court systems represent in this country, but everybody knows you got more lawyers here per capita than anywhere else in the world. And then the other statistic is the one that we have more incarcerated people than per capita than anywhere else in the world. And it's supposed to be America. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. And I live in Washington now. You know, I live in Washington now, but it just seems like every time you hear some terrible, terrible situation where somebody goes off and does something just horrific to another human being, you always find out this person's got a record a mile long. They can't keep anybody in jail that deserves to be, and yet our courts are overburdened with victimless crimes, and our jails are packed with victimless crimes. Something is broken. Go ahead, Kelly.
Something is broken, yeah. Well, did you know in per capita, speaking of per capita, New Jersey has the highest number of hazardous waste landfill per capita in the nation. At the same time, Washington, D.C. has the highest number of attorneys per capita. Do you know why this is so? New Jersey had three choices.
Say that again?
Go ahead, Kelly.
New Jersey has the highest number of hazardous waste landfills per capita. At the same time, Washington, D.C. has the highest number of attorneys per capita. Why did this happen? Because New Jersey had first choice.
That's terrible. I get it. Okay. They'd rather have the landfills than the lawyers.
Yeah.
I get it.
So, you know, even if you look at, you know, I've studied the Hebrews, the Torah and all that stuff. There was no instructions whatsoever for attorneys in the scriptures. None. Zero. Judges in every small town. Now, when Jesus came to the earth, he condemned three professions. One was the Pharisees, the religious hypocrites. Number two was the money changers, and I extrapolate that to the banksters. And number three is the attorneys, the teachers of the law. He ripped on them.
Yep.
But he really ticked them off. That's probably why one of the reasons why they wanted to kill him. And the people loved him because he would stand up to them.
Well, why would they use him again?
Well, our country was established this way. We had judges, we had grand juries, and we had trial by jury. That's the way the laws worked. Somehow the DA system got in. You know, I want to study that someday, the growth of the DAs, because now they have control through manipulation or refusing to submit a petition to a grand jury. The DAs have terrible, terrible power. They actually have, and their stories, William Winter talked about it, Lawless America, that's his focus, all this corruption. He has tried to submit, in Georgia anyway, complaints to grand juries, and the DA blocks it. And other people say, yeah, I tried that too, and the DA blocked it. The district attorney has no right to obstruct your right to petition for redress of grievance, but they do it. This is wrong.
It's become a game. I wonder how much of this has to do with coming out of Prohibition. Because you said that date, 1945, you know, which is only a decade, you know, kind of right after, you know, like, you know, every time we look at something historically as a date, we forget that there was a whole bunch of crap that happened the decade or 10, 20 years before it that led up to it. It's just like when you talk about the formation of the Fed and the 16th and 17th Amendment, you really have to go back to the Civil War and come forward and see what happened. To understand, you know, because Americans are so about the point of time when something occurred or changed, but what they don't realize is there's history up to it that caused it to change. In other words, what were the things that happened before that? You know, it's just like, you know, I've had that conversation before with people, trying to get people to understand that when the federal government, i.e., tried to dictate morality like they did with Prohibition, they created the greatest crime wave in the history of our country, which then created the greatest abuse of state sovereignty in our country, which was called the FBI. And then our world's never changed since then. You know, it's like 1 + 2 + 3, you know, it's just adding up those points and following those timelines. And people are screaming for relief, you know, for the government to do something. First of all, the government does something. that causes something, and then people scream for the government to fix it. And so then the government comes in and fixes it, and you lose more of your freedoms. I mean, it's just like ridiculous. But it seems to be a pattern that I'm finding throughout our history on any topic we talk about.
Well, isn't it Kissinger or one of the powers that be that said, you should never let a good crisis go to waste?
Wasn't that the communist?
Well, a number of them have said this. And with the intentions behind their word, the intentions from their plan is to create chaos, create disorder, and then they come along and become the saviors by creating the order. I mean, yeah, we feel somewhat safe, but it's the order they want, and it's straying us from the Constitution. David Icke had this phrase called a problem, reaction, solution. You know, like 9/11, problem. Oh, wow, that's the reaction. Solution, oh, we'll save you, Patriot Act. Problem, reaction, solution. He talks about this. I have not listened to him for years, but he nailed it. He said they create a problem. They want the people's reaction to be, oh, government, save us. And then the solution is more government.
That's pretty scary.
Well, and what I like to, you know, as I tried before, and you know, let's keep up with it, is I want to, you know, as I said, tie this in into the, you know, the questions that we have and try to get some solutions is, now, where does this, I like to tie this all in with the two questions we've covered so far. We've got a lot of them. We won't be able to get to all of them. But there are certain ones that I definitely want to get to.
I think we beat those two to death. You got another one that ties to this?
Well, I just don't know where it's been answered. I mean, the reasoning behind one, as I said, the age, you know, of people being arrested, so many arrested at the age of 23, and I don't know if we really covered. How the United States, as I said, with the second question, is with the sex trafficking, and now it's at epidemic levels of the United States. Now, you're saying it's just because all the laws, such as, you know, prostitution being illegal, the drugs being illegal, things of that nature? I mean, just if we could clarify.
Well,
that's
what I threw out there. That was the first thing that came to my mind is what I remember, when, you know, the whole talk from Judge Gray you would have to do some research to really answer that question. You know, what kind of arrests are made for those people? I mean, you don't want me researching while we're talking because it sounds like a job. You know what I mean? That's a deep question when you ask that one. Here, study, 41% of Americans have been arrested by the time they're 23. And while you guys are talking, I'll do some research.
Well, another problem that the youth suffers is the lack of the American dream.
Sure. And broken homes.
Broken homes, divorce. That's a whole other story. It used to be you had to have a good reason for divorce, but then the states came in with no-fault divorce. No-fault divorce meaning you got gas in your stomach. Okay, you can divorce now. Next case. Next case. And so that has really hurt the family. Statistics have shown that even if parents are squabbling and yelling, and yet they stay together, the kids are more secure. But that's another thing. So we've had the breakdown of the family, and the financial slippery slope that we are on right now, kids are wondering, is the American dream available for me? If not, I'm going to live with mom, because eat, drink, party, tomorrow we die. Next thing you know, this kid gets a woman pregnant, and that next generation is going to be without a mom and a dad together. We are seeing a breakdown. Oh, and by the way, that's one of the goals of the communists is they want to break down the family.
And part of that, I think, has to do with another question that's here on the list, is why is the birth rate in the United States, you know, fallen to an all-time low?
I mean, I've said this on numerous occasions. I think that is, yes?
Number.
Oh, number. Sorry about that. Let me go back. I'm doing some research as well as we're talking. That's number 26. And okay. You know, I've said this many times on the show, where I think our immigration problems stems in a lot of ways from this, or illegal immigration, stems a lot from this, because the indigenous population of the United States is, you know, slowly decreasing. Our rate of replacement, our ratio of replacement, it keeps continually becoming lower. And as we all know, that, you know, once a nation starts to lose its, lose its indigenous population, then, you know, the nation starts to go into decline, and I think that's what we're seeing here. I know there's more than just this reason, but I do think it definitely plays a part. I mean, when we were growing up, I mean, how many times have we seen families with, you know, 4-plus kids? Now it's almost unheard of, you know, if you have 4-plus kids, and if you have, like, 8 kids, you become a reality show, you know, a non-reality show. You know what I mean? You're put on TV, it's oh, my gosh, this person's got – now, granted, I'll talk about the person who had 8 kids at the same time, but it's like, you know, oh, my gosh, these people, they have 8 kids, you know, they make it as if it's some kind of spectacle. When back just one generation ago, and I'm talking about our parents, you know, that was – kind of a norm, you know, that they have.
Well, I'd say
know.
My grandparents. I'd say my grandparents' generation.
My mom's mom had 10 kids. My dad's mom had 18. And I'm one of
seven.
Yeah,
your grandparents.
So.
Oh, you're one of seven? Are you Catholic?
Well, yeah, my family's Catholic. I'm not Catholic, but my family is.
Well, my grandparents, I think 8 on one side, 7 on the other. Mm-hmm. They had 4 kids. My parents had 4 kids. I'm down to 2.
Well, that's. I mean, there's so many reasons for that. Everything from teaching, you know, in terms of population overgrowth, that was big when I was a kid, to the fact that, you know, we went from an agrarian culture to a industrial revolution to a white-collar, you know, educated. The cost of living, you couldn't afford to have kids. Then you went through the dual income family increase. I mean, I've done whole papers on this. You know, I mean, there's so many different reasons for that. You know.
Yeah, when it comes to immigration, and when it comes to, you know, the family, and it comes to values, do you think that this being the case, that, you know, it's actually doing harm to the United States? Is this all, you know, is this low birth rate?
I tell young people all the time.
Having detrimental effects, you know.
I tell young people all the time, breed more. We need more people. our culture is falling, is disappearing. I have no problem telling people that, you know.
Right.
Get on it.
And we're becoming more of a salad bowl than a melting pot, too. Or who did you, someone said a salad bar? I think that was Randy the other night. Did he
oh,
say
Rex.
It was more
like a, That sounds like a Rex thing.
Oh, Rex, maybe Rex said a salad bar.
You know, talking yeah. about bars, you know, that would be Rex.
Well, I thought it's more like a salad bar because you have all these illegals coming in, and, you know, for one price, getting all you can eat. You know what I mean? So the one price of getting, you know, of sneaking into the country, you know. You can have, you know, get on the welfare system. You can
well,
get, you know,
also,
jobs.
Another reason, I'll throw another reason out there just on this particular question. You know, people are not getting married as young. You know, they don't get married and start families. People are holding off. You know, they come from these broken, you know, there's so many social economic reasons for everything that occurs. You know, you can pick any one of them and use it as a reason, but also people are not getting married as young. They're not launching into that start your family world, and a lot of that is everything from what they experience coming from a broken generation of, you know, high divorce rate in their parents, so they're wary, to the cost. You know, it just in my parents' day, you just got married and started a family. It's what you did. You know, it's just the way things work. But, you know, my dad could work and actually pretty much, if you didn't want to live high on the hog, you know, mom could stay home. Well, that's unheard of in this day and age. Now it takes two or three jobs to pay your bills. People do not People do not understand, and this goes back to the whole Ron Paul revolution on the Fed. The Fed has taken your dollar and made it worth 98% less. It's worth 2% of what it was in 1913 when the Fed started. And I hear people all the time on talk show radio never cover this issue. Never. Nobody will talk about it. Inflation has destroyed the value of your dollar. I'll hear even conservative talk radio people, I can think of one in particular, Michael Medved, will argue with people over the fact that, oh, we have a higher standard of living and we have more products and better technology and better health care, and yet I can disprove that all day long. Yeah, you got more TVs, our health is gone, our culture's gone, our family unit's gone, people work all the time, they spend unbelievable amounts of time on the freeway in rush hour traffic instead of doing things as a family. Our system's breaking down. People have to work their tail ends off to maintain their cost of living. I mean, I can remember at my age, I remember being in my 30s or mid-30s or whatever, and the median income in America was 20 grand.
Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago. That was less than 20 years ago. 20 grand. You could take care of your family on 20 grand. Now if you make 50, you're broke. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know a welder who was trying to get a job. He lost his job for a bit. He was making like 19. Luckily, he got it back with the same company. But anyway, he was looking around, and he'd been doing this for like 25 years, 30 years, whatever. And they were offering $12 an hour. And he said, gee, you know, in the late 80s, you offer me 12 now. I've been at this for how many years? And now you're going to offer me $12 an hour. Are you serious? Interview over. What's going on? I mean, the wages have increased, but the expenses have. Oh, that's right. Now mom and dad both have to work. Oh, that's right. The family, this Keynesian economics is failing us.
It's destroying
off the gold standard.
It's moving faster. And my belief is it's moving faster. I look at the money I had, you know, the money I had, I made even in the late 90s, right before the dot-bomb crash. And today, you know, I look as a contractor, let's say I do a remodel or whatever. I haven't been able to raise my fees. In fact, I've had to drop them over the last 4 or 5 years just to stay in the market. But I'll tell you what, this actually brings back to something I just spent 3 or 4 days doing. And that was breaking down that third-party debate responses to the second debate, was Virgil Good said, you know, in the middle of this crisis, we got two things. And this is a hallmark of his platform. He's the only guy that will talk about it. He's the only guy that has enough gonads to talk about it. But he said, number one, you got illegal immigration. Number two, you have legal green card immigration of 1.2 million people a year. And it's been going on. Bush did it. Obama has done it nonstop since he's been in power. 1.2 million green cards a year handed out.
And real quick, and I do want to get back to that because that's definitely a subject that I've got great interest in. But I just want to use that opportunity to do a plug for tomorrow night's show for the folks because you're bringing up Virgil Good. It's not Virgil Good, but his running mate, Jim Clymer, will be on this show, Bard's Logic Political Talk, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and he will come in to discuss and respond to the questions that were asked during the vice presidential candidates debate, and he will be answering to those questions tomorrow night. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was just typing. Anyway, Virgil. Go ahead,
Robert. I want to tease you just for a second here.
Sure.
You did a plug for your show. I've heard you before many times give plugs for other shows like Hammy's and the Rex and Tech Show. Again, you have my respect for freely promoting other people's shows I mean, your theme here is liberty. It's not Robert. It's liberty.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
Robert,
the
Robert
the
Liberty. Change your name.
No, I'm not going to do that. I'd be an insult to my father.
Robert
but,
Liberty.
I couldn't do that. That'd be an insult to my dad. But yeah, we have Jim Clymer on. That's, I'm pretty, you know, excited about that. It's actually going to be the second time he's come on. Go ahead.
And I'll add something to that, to promoting this. Every human being, I don't care who you're voting for, you need to listen to this guy. He is brilliant. All right? I mean, absolutely amazing. Our interview of him when he got into natural law, you know, jurisprudence, when he got into the way that Good and Clymer, if they won, what an administration would look like. Rex asked him a really tough question about, you know, reversing all these illegal laws, and he said, "It doesn't matter to us. What's important is that we follow the Constitution, which means we will not go in there and abuse the Constitution to fix abused things. We will do it legally, even if it takes longer." And that was Rex was quiet when he answered that. He goes, "I got tremendous respect for these guys." Because here's the problem I have with the whole Republican issue. This thing that whoever came up with it, I don't remember who came up with it, but my criminal is better than your criminal. And we used to talk about this a lot coming out of Tampa when everybody started rolling over and kissing the Romney ring. Going, okay, well, we have a winner. We have to back him. We have to support him. And I used to have this ongoing argument with people going, so just because there's an R by his name, you're going to ignore rules, laws, and bones broken over the last year to get this guy nominated illegally, and it's okay because as long as it's your side. In other words, the rule of law and right and wrong don't matter as long as you're on the winning side. Is that what this party has become? That used to be a common conversation I had with people. And they didn't like it, but nobody wanted to talk about it. Because that's always been the point of why are we Republicans? Why did we choose to become Republicans? Why did we stay in the Republican Party? Because we were supposed to be God, country, rule of law, right and wrong, family, country, you know, cling to our guns and our religion. And now that doesn't mean anything because we've got to get rid of the other evil guy. So my criminal is better than your criminal, and it's okay because it's an R. And that is something, that conversation is going to come back after the election, because I think regardless of what people choose to do or choose to vote for, if they choose to vote third party or choose to vote for Republican and you know, just to oust Obama, I know this is not going to settle well in people's hearts. If it does, our country's lost. If it bothers them and they choose to help force change, you know what I'm saying, in the process, that's one thing. But I have a feeling that a lot of people are not going to be happy with themselves.
So to them, to those who are still going to vote Republican, and it becomes an absolute mess in a few years.
Oh, faster than anybody thinks.
Do you want this on your conscience?
Not me. Nobody has talked about this. This is one of those that should be a question. When we run out of the money that we have right now running government for this year under Obama, do you really believe? I mean, we're talking about a guy who has never said one thing about cutting government. That's the Republican. Well, I say that lightly. Okay. Has said nothing about cutting government. In fact, I have somewhere in here an article or a YouTube where he said, "Oh, I wouldn't cut very much because I don't want to mess with the economy," which sounds just like a Democrat. And so what's going to happen is I guarantee you that if Romney wins and you have a Republican House, that the debts and it doesn't matter if you have Democrats or not because they'll vote for it. They love to raise the debt limit because they're trying to destroy our damn country. Okay, but I guarantee you the debt ceiling will be raised almost immediately at the turn of the year if Romney takes over.
Well, there's a cartoon I saw. There's this reporter. It was a two-screenshot. This reporter says, "Yes, in order to maintain the government, they raised the debt ceiling again. And in local news, law enforcement is having a hard time enforcing DUIs, so they raised the legal intoxication limit.
Wow. And that brings me to, we're talking about the debates, and I sent you in chat the next question. And go ahead, and Kelly, if you want to chime in first, and then Chris, or
I got to get over to a conference call.
That's
yeah,
right.
I got to get over to
that.
A conference call with Watch the Vote, our weekly conference call. But
right.
One more comment I wanted to throw out about the Romulan. He's going to beat Obubu in Ohio. Now, they're pitching it as a swing state, but how do I know? I mean, this is all suspicion, and, of course, I'm using artistic license. The reason why is because, well...
Thanks for pointing that out. Good.
Yeah. So, those of you who love the Romulan, have no concern. Ohio's your state. Tag Romney, who was discovered, is a part owner in one of these corporations that make the electronic voting machine. It's the hard voting machine that is put out in Ohio. So, you know, you talk with the other corporate people and this and that and da-da-da, like Clinton Curtis mentioned with Tom Feeney, how he possibly won an election and la-da-da. So, you know, Tag will just help his dad. Hey, Dad, you know, you're a great dad, and I'm just going to give you Ohio. How's that, you know, since I'm
investing.
Well,
he actually owns, five different states, right? Ohio, Texas, California, Oregon, something else, without looking.
Well, the heart machine, I'm not sure how many, but I know this just came out. It's looking ugly. And so,
that's fine. They don't need our vote then. We can go vote third party. They got it covered.
Go.
What are they worried about?
Yep.
What are they worried about?
Yep. I mean, Tag could have invested in, you know, a plethora, endless possible stock options or whatever. Daddy give him some money. He could invest it here, there, real estate, whatever. No, he decided to invest in electronic election machines.
Well, I actually have an article that I found earlier in the year that showed that Bain had investments in machines already before this came out.
Well, I was just asked an interesting question, gentlemen, if we got time to
give her help.
Answer this. Is somebody, Harriet from the chat asked, what do you think will happen if by chance the election turns out to be tied? Now, I know there's a process for it, and I believe that goes. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, but hold on. First of all, you have to think properly here. Number one, it's not a national election. It's done state by state. So popular vote means nothing. So if you're thinking that's the wrong way to look at it. You have to look at when you say tied. Now, if you want to clarify, you go, if neither one of them gets 270 electors, which is a process of not popular vote, but it depends on which state you win.
There is actually a possibility to have a tie electoral count as well.
Well, that's
it's
what
very
I'm
rare,
saying.
Very hard to
but
do,
popular,
yeah,
but
is,
I'm saying
is.
You. What I'm saying is you got to get the popular vote out of your mind because it's state by state voting for who wins the electors. Now, if you get a tie in the electors and nobody gets 270, then it'll go to the House, and then they will have a brokered convention in the House, and of course the Senate votes on the vice president. But that's what will happen. And could it happen? Sure, why not? I mean, I guess it depends on who can control. I mean, the question. I mean, you really have to ask yourself after Obama's Kelly's favorite word, a boo-boo, after his terrible debate performance in that debate, you know, a lot of us already
That's
went
hilarious.
Right there that he's been told to throw the election, you know. And if you go back and you listen to the Alex Jones, the InfoWars, oh, my God, here we go, conspiracy theory, but you listen to Lindsey Williams' interview, he says that because this guy knows some very powerful people in the world, and he said that Obama slipped the reservation and did some things that pissed off the global bankers, and they want him out of there. Well, it's the same people control both of them. So they just like in you see all the corrupt boxer movies when a guy is told to throw the fight. I mean, do you think Obama's going to get hurt if he doesn't get reelected? The guy's whole future is already bought and paid for on a world global scale. But he slipped the reservation. He did some things. He pissed off the bankers. And so they told him, you know, throw the election, but act like just for, you know, you got to keep your constituents happy and keep that money rolling in, so you act like you're trying to win, even though we know by that debate. Kelly and I were on the phone talking about this. I could waste Romney in a debate, and he did nothing.
Well, here's
something
interesting.
With his head down.
Yeah, here's a few interesting points, and I got to get going to this conference call.
Sure.
Indiana,
Real quick, I just want to let the folks on hold. I will be opening up your mic shortly. I just want to let Kelly answer his question or make his comments before he's got to go. Go ahead, Kelly. Thank you.
Oh, okay, sure. Indiana, the courts, what's interesting is, I'll tell the story first. Indiana, the courts are looking into the legitimacy of Obama as if he's actually going to be legitimate for being on the ballot.
Well, that's a bunch of states, isn't it?
Well, this is the one that's made the most progress so far to get all the others were kind of commission or administrative judges, but this one is going up there, and it's going to be heard, I guess, the 23rd. 22nd or 23rd tomorrow or Tuesday. So that would be an interesting shock in this whole general election process. The other thing, and by the way, it's interesting if the powers that be are that powerful that finally they're allowing one of them to hurt Obama. I mean, this is a big if, but it's just kind of a little bit suspicious to look at it from hindsight in a few months. All right, the other point, I won't be surprised if Gary Johnson wins the Electoral College from New Mexico. Why? He was a governor there. They loved him. Ron Paul has got the okay in Maine, and I wouldn't be surprised if Ron Paul wins one, two, maybe three states. Yeah. Iowa is going to be a write-in possibility. Washington State as well. And mm-hmm. Gary Johnson might pull well in Texas. Ron Paul people are just flooding over to Gary Johnson in Texas. They got a huge contingency when I was at the National Convention of Libertarians. There, it's huge from Texas. And so we might have a spot, and instead of just the R&D winners all over the country, we could have two, three, maybe five states going to a third party, which would crack the door open, but I think people would start flooding into the third parties. And with that, I guess I got to go, guys. Always good to be on.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly. Go ahead. I won't keep you. I know you got a very important conference call to go to. And thank you very much. And, folks, that was, of course, one of the other panelists in Barge Logic Political Talk, Kelly Mordecai. And if you would, please visit his website, which is thehiddenfourthbranch.com. And the fourth is the number four and TH. And he also written a book of the same name, which I recommend people going out and purchasing. It'd be well worth the purchase price. And that is also called The Hidden Fourth Branch. And if you'd like to hear more about his book or about the grand jury, you can find an interview that I have done with Kelly. It's a little further back in the archives, but it is there, and I recommend it. It's very interesting listening. And at this time, I'm going to pose the next question and then let in our caller. So the next question we have here is, since we're talking about the Fed and Romney, is how in the world can you have a debate about the economy that lasts for an hour and a half and never even mention Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve, or quantitative easing?
Go ahead, let him in. We'll tear this one up. Robert, did you shut off your phone again?
954, you're live.
No, here I am. Here. This is Harriet. I forgot I'm on myself. I didn't intend to say anything. I wrote everything to Robert, so Robert could choose what he wants to include or not include in the program tonight.
Sure.
No, go ahead, Harriet. I'm typing to someone in the chat. Real quick, you guys go ahead.
I know. There's there's just so much here. I'm just overwhelmed. I don't want to start talking because I won't finish for 3 years. So I'm just going to mute myself and listen to everybody else.
Did I answer your question for you?
Yes, yes, you did. And I wrote some other suggestions to you, Robert, too, if you wanted to include them. But, the pregnancy situation and everything, it's going to be just ongoing, and Medicaid is going to pick up, and food stamps and WIC and the health department and the free hospital service is going to pick up labor and delivery charges for anybody that doesn't have a means of paying, and I don't know whenever that's going to improve.
Oh, it's going to crash.
Well,
fatalistic, but it's going to crash. We are beyond. I mean, we're going to run out. We're going to have to raise the debt ceiling again. China. This ties to that conversation. I keep bringing this up, and I think I'm scaring the hell out of people because nobody wants to talk about it. But all the trade deals where China is dealing with China and Japan, China and India, China and Brazil, China and South Africa, China and the BRICS nations, China and the Arab Emirate states, China and Iran, China and Russia, plus Russia's going to be sending China all the oil they want. All those countries, plus there's some more that I was doing some more research because I'm doing this whole document on it or documentary or whatever research, but all these deals, all the numbers are, all the banks are set in place, all the money exchanges are set in place, where China is now going to be trading with everybody in the world, no longer using the U.S. dollar. That means trillions of U.S. dollars are going to come home unused.
Right.
And we have QE3, which is $40 billion a month, where the federal government is buying all the mortgage-backed dollars. In other words, every piece of land, whether you own a house or a business or whatever that has land in the loan, the government is buying all that up, which ties to two different issues. One, you know, property rights in America, and two, very important, Agenda 21. That opens the door for Agenda 21 all over the place. So I don't know how they plan on paying for this stuff. Then you have all the social welfare issues in this country and healthcare.
All that,
you add all that up together and you put that on one side of the scale against our ability to recover with a dollar that hasn't had a gold, an ounce of gold behind it for I don't know how many years. I mean, nobody talks about this. Nobody is willing to have a conversation about it. This goes back to the question that Robert just brought up, number 14 on our list, is nobody talks about the Fed. I mean, this is all tied to all this stuff. And we had that conversation, I don't know, a few months ago when they uncovered that the Fed had given out $15 trillion worth of loans to a bunch of people in Europe. We don't even know who. We can guess. But, you know, they're bailing out Europe, and Europe is still going to crash. So, all right, and we've got China and all these other countries whose economies aren't where ours are at, and they're sick of the U.S. playing games and our politicians screwing our dollar up. When's it all going to hit? I don't know. You know, who's going to lend us money? When Romney wins the election because his son owns all the machines in the key state and the key swing states, what's going to happen? What's going to happen when Romney gets in and they got to raise the debt ceiling and China says, sorry, we're tired of you. We're tired of you crooked politicians. And you won't straighten up your economics. You lie to your people. You lie to each other. You won't straighten up your expenditures in your country. You know, you won't deal with the issues. You won't discuss them. I don't know. I'm just sitting here going, wow, this is. I didn't want to know all this crap. I just wanted to elect a good conservative, get in there, and fix our country, and that's forced me to do this research. And now I'm standing here going, I don't want to know this crap. I don't know if that helps anybody, but
you know, when I say I'm nervous and I tell people I'm upset and different things like that, and because I'm so sad and everything, and people say, "Oh well, you know, that's the way it is."
Oh, Romney's gonna. Harriet, I look at the world 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, as we went through. We went through things. We went through tough economic times, but we recovered. We could get up and go to work and start another business, and we had another upswing, and I'm going, right.
Well, we had our family, you know, like when I was working and my child was sick, I had my mother-in-law send them to take care of them. I didn't have to worry about daycare or Head Start or any of these things that, you know, today is in fashion and all that. It's just a different way of raising the children, and children are really raised without one parent, and that's the way their life is, and, you know, and it's pitiful. I can write book after book after book of my experiences.
Do you remember the latchkey generation? Go ahead. Sorry, Robert.
Oh, no, time is just absolutely flying tonight. It's incredible. But and there's still many more, even just in the description I put in, I'd like to cover. But, I mean, these two, I think, you know, are relevant to this specific conversation we're having now. There are two questions out there. About the U.S. dollar. Let me look that up.
Number nine.
Will the U.S. dollar soon lose its status as the primary reserve currency of the world? We've talked about that on a few other shows. And also, the next one that I wanted to discuss, it's kind of close to that, is why is the United Nations pushing to have the authority to impose global taxes on all of us?
They have to pay for this mechanism that's in place. If you watch that video and you listen to this guy, Lindsay Williams, and you talk about – see, here's the part I think that's going to be the devastation to the heart and soul of this country is when they realize this is a planned event. That's what that, I think, is. It's one thing when we go, oops, there was a mistake and we had some trouble. And because I've, you know, at my age, I've gone through several economic crashes that have cost me a small fortune. And I never really thought anybody was doing it on purpose. Now I know that they were doing it on purpose, so I have a whole different outlook on it. You know, that these people want a global currency. The challenge is the people in Europe and the U.S. and our crooked politicians and the Fed have one idea of what they want to accomplish, and then China and the countries that are aligning behind China have a different a different goal, and there's kind of a battle going on. And this ties back to the Middle East, and what are we doing in the Middle East, and why did we help Libya, and now help the bad guys who were killing our people in Afghanistan take control and oust the guy we put in power there and backed, and now he's out. Now we got the Muslim Brotherhood and some of the radicals in control, and people go, well, why'd we do that? Well, now people who have, I don't know if you want to call them conspiracy theorists, are going, well, that way we can stay in there because now we got to fix the next problem. I mean, so you have these conflicting, you know, the problem with most Americans is they watch news through a U.S. news sources. And if you want to know what's going on in the world, especially in the Middle East with Iran and Syria and the rest of it, you have to get outside of this country to get the truth. Because the truth is we're really a battle with Russia and China. Now, I don't know how that's going to go because we're not just dealing with a bunch of radicals in the Middle East and a bunch of, you know, what people talk about, you know, is it the Sunnis or the Shiites or the, you know, the tribal this or that. No, those are just the pawns in the bigger battle. And for us who went through the Cold War, you have to realize that, you know, it was always war by proxy. We have boots on the ground, and Russia has boots on the ground in Syria. And Turkey is a staging ground for some of these conflicts. So the question is do we really know what's going on? No. And then why are we doing it if it isn't trying to initiate a war? Because it seems like America's been constantly at war since World War II, nonstop. And I haven't finished that research. I'm going to timeline that. We've always been in some kind of conflict, and most of them are not resolved. You know, we never got an end result. You know, all that stuff went on in South America. We never got a positive end result for anything we've done. These sanctions that we're doing on Iran is forcing, well, for one, our indebtedness our own willingness to cut government and take care of our finances at the federal level, and what it's doing to our dollar, and our sanctions in Iran are driving China and Russia and these other countries to go, because they get oil from there. They're going, well, you know, and it's the European Union forcing these sanctions with the U.S., and then you got China and the rest of these countries going, you're hurting us. And so they're doing something about it. They're saying, screw you. You're going to put sanctions on and hurt us because you have the world reserve money, the U.S. dollar, the oil reserve money. And so they're looking for a solution to get out from underneath our power and our influence, because they no longer trust American influence in the world.
Well, I went on a rampage there. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just doing some research here or something.
Did I answer that question?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, my God.
Well, then it's good. Well, that gives us time to go to another one that, you know, we can
talk
about.
I covered 11, too, haphazardly, because the bottom line is that people are not going to have any value in their retirement. Number 11, keeping interest rates near zero, is the Federal Reserve crushing retirement dreams of Americans? Yeah, they don't care. They have a goal. Everybody needs to be dependent, because when this thing crashes, according to this Lindsey Williams guy, when it crashes, it's got to be at a point where people will go, they will accept a new currency, a new economic system.
Mm-hmm.
And in that economic system, every aspect of your life will be under control. That's what Obamacare has set up.
Right, right.
Go ahead, ask another question.
Well,
see if I
think
scare
it's
the hell out of people. See if I can scare the hell out of people on Sunday night.
No, no, we don't want to scare the hell out of people. We just want to, you know, ask the questions and
yeah,
discuss them that you're not going to find from the media.
Just keep thinking voting for Romney is going to solve this. That's all you got to do. Just keep believing them.
Well, and you, I think you touched on this a little bit. It says by keeping interest rates – oh, you did 11. Yeah, you already did answer that one.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of scrolling down here. It says, why are nearly 500,000 employees of the federal government making over $100,000 a year?
Number? What number?
That's number 13.
Well, yeah. I mean, we saw that. We saw the increase. I remember that when Obama first got elected, that especially on the conservative talk radio, which I used to listen to, and now I don't waste an ounce of my time listening to anymore, but I used to hear the statistics on the increase in federal government while everybody else was losing jobs. And that was definitely, a planned event. You know, expand federal government as fast as humanly possible on money that didn't exist. And I guess that rolls back to a question I keep asking, and not one conservative, including blog writers, radio show hosts, anybody I've ever asked, is why did the Republicans who control the House, the purse strings, allow this stuff to happen? They can't. That many human beings, that many Republicans cannot be that inept. They're either stupid or they're in on it. And it's part of a bigger plan, because I've never got a straight answer out of anybody, a politician I've interviewed, anybody, on why it is that when we have full control of the House, which Newt Gingrich had in the mid to late 90s, with a liberal president and a Senate, almost the exact same scenario, why is it the Republicans have done nothing to stop the expansion of federal government when they control the purse strings? I mean, can you answer that, Robert?
Can you repeat the question? I was like reading something. Just being honest with you. I'm doing some research on something. I sent a message. What I was reading was the message I sent you in chat. If you could just answer that. What was the question? Then I'll go ahead and answer that again.
Which question? Oh, why the Republicans? Why the Republicans? Have done nothing when they're in full control of the House and the purse strings to stop any of the overexpansion of federal government, including the jobs and the expansion of those jobs, because I remember all the statistics when Obama came in power,
right.
The debt ceiling increase, or funding Obamacare. They could have crushed Obamacare. All they had to do was withhold the money. Why have
they
done nothing? to stop Obama on any of his overexpansion of economic issues.
Well, personally, because I think, and if you could respond to the thing in chat, that'd be great, our Facebook chat. But, well, I think that, you know, we've talked about this even in the, during the primaries, is that your political elite want to, you know, just make us their serfs, and, you know, they're kind of like the new oligarchy. You know, you have the president kind of, you know, look at Obama, the way he travels around, which actually that brings me to a question. Now, let me get the number to that, and then I'll finish answering that up. But, yeah, that's what I think. I think the reason why they haven't done anything is because, one, I think they're so insulated against whatever happens in this country because of the way they position themselves that, you know, they're still going to be the ruling oligarchy of the United States because a lot of folks just won't vote them out. And we're going to become the serfs, and we're going to be so dependent on the government, then we're just going to keep on voting them in. So that's why I think they're not. But it does bring me to a question, number 16. It says, the British taxpayers spent $57.8 million on the royal family in 2011. It says, U.S. taxpayers spent $1.4 billion on the Obamas that same year. How in the world can this be justified? It's got a little link there, I guess, where they got the information.
What a lifestyle, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Well, that's what I mean by the new royalty. They don't have to have the same insurance plans that they want to try to force the health care system, meaning the Obamacare. You know, why are they, you know, why would Congress and the Senate and the President and these politicians, why would they be exempt from Obamacare when they want to try to force it down the rest of our throats?
And that's something to ask our I haven't heard Randy come on tonight, but that's something to ask our constitutional guys is how did we ever get to a point in this country where the people we elect live by a different set of laws and rules and economic standards than the rest of the people that they are supposed to be I don't want to say ruling over because that's not what they're there for, but that's what it seems like it's become. Why?
And right.
When did that happen? You know, because I can't imagine it being legal, but I can't imagine. But again, they do things every day that aren't legal.
Right, or extra legal, right. That's interesting.
I should have become a politician. They live too damn good.
I'd say, well, then they have to, you know, they're okay to do inside trading, you know, whereas you and I, we'd find prison time for that.
Yeah. Oh, that's just the beginning. You know.
But that's what I think on that one. I mean, I've been saying that for, you know, quite some time.
Well,
I think that's what they're trying to get to.
We've rolled back to what they used to call the blue blood. You know, that they are
right,
royalty.
Right.
They live by a whole different set of rules than the rest of us. And I don't know if the American people are – I don't know what it's going to take for people to stand up and go enough. I don't know. You know, it's just like when you hear Kelly come on about the court systems and the grand jury and how people – you know, it's just this – our whole criminal system is just this, you know, economic barter deal. You know, and I think most of us have wondered, I mean, because when you look at, and you've heard this analogy that, you know, most of our American cities are more dangerous than it is in our places where our soldiers are at war, you know, that it's just out of control, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's one of the biggest, you know, concerns I had, not one of the biggest, but it was a concern about Romney because I truly don't think that he, you know, even has any clue, you know, what the rest of, you know, America is going through, you know, economically because what's going on. And I think a lot of the politicians don't, as I said, that's because they're just so insulated from it.
Well, do they care? Because you can always walk down in the streets of humanity and take a look for yourself. You know what I'm saying? I mean, having compassion and understanding doesn't mean that you have to have actually walked in the, necessarily walked in the same
shoes. Well, that's true. But you know, you would hope they'd be able to be a little, you know, empathetic.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. Do they care? Live by another set of rules and you feel that you're entitled to live by another set of rules than the rest of the world, do you really give a crap?
Like question number 25. Why are nearly 30% of all young adults in the 25 to 34 year age bracket living at home or with their parents?
Why are they?
That's the question.
They're broke.
They're coming out of college and not being able to find any jobs in their field. I mean, just like on the presidential debate, that kid was like, so is there going to be anything for me when I get out of college besides debt? I mean, I'm paraphrasing,
Yeah, let me count. I want to counter that a little bit, too. What kind of freaking degree are you getting? Because my son's in ITT Tech right now, and they have a 90-plus percent placement ratio coming out. So, you know, what are they teaching these kids in universities anymore? You know, our system, I mean, they're coming out with degrees, and you're just like, well, what the hell? Who in the hell would hire you for that? You know, and I think that always rolls back. But again, ITT Tech is a private college, and the board of directors are from companies like Microsoft, Real Networks, Intel, Boeing, et cetera, et cetera. So the board of directors, you know, come in people from mega corporations who know what they need in employment, design the curriculum and the degrees. So they go to school and they get out and they actually are the degree is fitted to what industry demands. The problem, and that rolls back to our whole educational system. And of course I have a little bit of insight in this because I grew up with one grandmother and my mom and dad both were educators off and on their whole lives. And so, you know, they used to actually teach things to people. And now what we do is we have colleges become an extension of what they didn't do in high school because they can't teach them anything in high school anymore. So they go to college for the first 2 years. They're finishing stuff that in my mom's generation, she had done by the time she was 16 years old. And why is that? Well, if you're a conservative, you would say that's because the government's got their fingers in our education system instead of communities and private industry. Because that's one of the things that I've always faced as a contractor is, you know, people talk about needing work and then you hire them and they're worthless. You know, it's not just their knowledge base, it's their attitude.
Well,
you know,
I just want to bring in someone we really enjoy having on Bard's Logic Political Talk, and he's come on as a panelist on other occasions here on the show. And he also is a host of another blog talk radio show, which is the Tex and Rex Show, which you can find on various evenings, which he could tell the folks about. And so without any further ado, I am bringing on Rex from the Tex and Rex Show. Thank you very much, Rex, for coming in. How are you?
I'm well, Robert. How are you?
Good, good.
Excellent. Interesting
dude,
thing that
dude.
You guys are talking about, you know, what kind of degrees are people getting? And, you know, it's not a coincidence that our high school graduates have less real education than eighth graders did 40 and 50 years ago. And, you know, college, at least the first 2 years, has basically become a replacement for what used to be the junior and senior year of high school.
Yep.
Now, there is
exactly.
some truth to the fact that there's considerably more data to learn, but the basics are the basics, and they're not learning the basics. They're not learning, you know, rhetoric, logic. They're not learning basic history. It's pretty pathetic, and it's not by accident because I'm fairly confident that the corporatists, like a utilitarian populace as opposed to an educated populace. See, the problem with education is it's what creates the middle class. Education and free markets created the middle class. Before that, you had your upper class and your abject poor, basically the lords and the serfs. And then when education became available and free markets were introduced, you had a rising, initially merchant class, and then, you know, a middle class. And if you're trying to rule a population, you want to get rid of that middle class, and the best way to do it is to eliminate free markets, tax and inflate their wealth away, and make sure that their kids aren't too bright so that they won't challenge the new system. And that's exactly what they're doing.
My mom has a classic. Yeah. My mom has always called it.
How can that be denied? Go ahead. Sure.
She left. My mom is brilliant, history, sociology teacher, double masters, right? And she said she called it, her favorite coin was the dumbing down of America. And she talks about it going right around the 60s, 70s is when she really saw it. Because she said basically when she was in school, by the time you were 16, you were pretty much done. And you were figuring out, am I an academic person going to college? Am I getting out? Am I going to go find a trade? And also, I have a book that was written in 1851 and you've probably even read it, Rex, that talks about the founders and gives a little autobiography, a little short clip on all the founding founders of our country. And every one of them was out of high school, essentially out of public school, so to speak, and into a trade or college at 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told my children this. I don't know. I've had this conversation my whole life, and maybe it's because I grew up around a bunch of educators, but I've said to people that America created the American teenager. You know, the whole cultural, let me piss away 4 or 5 years of my life, was created in this country.
Well, yeah, and I think to some degree it is a potentially negative but also could be beneficial byproduct of affluence and more knowledge, more education, more information, and, you know, the benefits of a rising middle class due to free markets gave us the luxury of having teenage years. But generally speaking, and still today in most places around the world, if you're 13 – you're a man. If you're 13, you're a woman. So when we hear about, oh, you know, I can't believe it, the girl got married at 15, she was pregnant at 16, and she started having kids by the time she was 24, there were like 6 or 7
kids.
That was normal.
Yeah.
So, you know, now granted, today you tell me that a 15-year-old got married, I'd be a little concerned because our emotional
maturity level
is considerably thwarted, but that can be remedied. But, you know, the fact is that if we don't right this ship right quick and real soon, tomorrow's teenagers are going to grow up real quick, and not in the way that our current teenagers are growing up, where they're more sexually aware, they're more consumer aware, but actually grow up in the real world real quick, because when you have poverty at an alarming rate, and when you have 22% of your unemployment population unemployed, when you have a declining currency and a global commitment to empire and debt that is unsustainable, you're likely to see a lot of poverty. You grow up real quick in the real things that matter because you don't have a choice. And if we don't start preparing these kids for tomorrow now, they're not going to know how to handle it. And what happens when teenagers, and some of those teenagers are actually adult adolescents, maybe as old as 40 years old, who have no need to accept the responsibility of marriage because, well, frankly, you can get laid very easily these days. There's no prohibition on it. And you've got video games to entertain
very
you, so you
succinct.
Don't really – what's that?
So that's very succinct there, Rex. Go ahead.
That's true.
You nailed it.
I mean, think about it. If you can have the sex, you can have the job, you can have the toys, you can play the video games, there's really no point in leaving the teenage years even when you're 40 years old. And what that basically means is when reality hits, you're going to be woefully unprepared. Most of us are only able to provide food and energy and other things as consumers. Not too many of us know how to get these things as creators. And when those things get taken away, basically there's an old song that says a country boy will survive, and the others won't.
Yep.
So you know, we have two choices. One, well, first of all, I think these skills are necessary and should be taught, and there are places where they have been taught, such as the Boy Scouts of America, but obviously we're trying to destroy them too. But we have to start teaching the kids these things, but more importantly, we need to prevent this collapse from happening. Now, can we actually prevent the total collapse? Not really. I mean, it's an economic certainty at some point, but we can certainly recover from it very quickly if we're doing the right things. And that's what really this election kind of has not necessarily brought to light, because if you had eyes to see, you could have seen it coming for a long time. Ron Paul's been talking about it for 40 years. But more people are awake now, and what we need to do is wake up the rest of them. And we're kind of in the prologue of the coming battle, which really will start with whichever moron they decide to put in the White House and what kind of makeup on the Senate and House we get November 7th. And that's really where we need to go. But the fact is, you have to realize there is a significant difference between credentials and education. We use those words interchangeably, but a degree is a credential. You know, having the degree, the certification or whatever, that's a credential. It doesn't necessarily mean you're educated, because I know a lot of credentialed people who are dumber than
stupid
shit. And I know a lot of people who've never gotten a degree in anything who are very savvy and very intelligent. So, you know, the problem with an education system that focuses on credentials and making you a good consumer or a good employee is not likely to be the kind of education system that makes you a good and decent
citizen.
Person and a good citizen.
Right.
And that's what
right.
we need to get back to.
Well, and I've years ago I used to teach on this stuff all the time. But if you look at the difference between IQ and EQ, emotional quotient, and you look at the numbers of people, and I used to have these facts and figures in my mind all the time because I did classes on this, but the numbers of people who are successful and wealthy are usually the people who never had college, and many of them dropped out of high school. And it's because the IQ, you know, the ability to memorize and pass a test has nothing to do with creating things. Being, you know, having longevity in your mind, being able to sacrifice for the future, to have a dream, to be pushed by those components, all the things, you know, that, and I could arguably, like I said, I used to teach classes on this. You can teach principles of success. They come right out of the Bible. And most of them have nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with, you know, with sacrifice and delayed gratification and self-discipline and the ability to have a vision, not just a dream, because the problem with most Americans is they dream too much. What you have to be able to do is turn a dream into a vision, which means you put timelines on it, and then you get down to the details. Like, in 4 years, I want to accomplish this. Now, that will actually define itself down to what do I do today to actually get me to where I want to be in 4 years. That's, you know, if you've ever read Stephen Covey's stuff, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, you know, all this stuff. You don't learn this crap in school. I never learned any of this stuff in school. I learned it because I was a free enterpriser, and I surrounded myself. I went out and I found out. And I've actually done things in my life that people think, wow, you really do that? I've actually gone up to somebody who is very wealthy and said, can I buy you lunch? And because I want to sit down with you and I want to ask you, I have 10 questions I want to ask you. And it isn't the how questions. Unfortunately, we are, and this has to do with our educational system, but the problem is not the how did you do it, it's why did you do it? Why did you make these decisions? Why did you change your life? Why did you choose to go left instead of right? The why questions are the questions that define success or failure in life, not the how. Because the how is just the facts that you see. You know, it's an accumulation of information. Yeah. So anyway, I got on a roll, but I did want to add something.
Good roll.
To your humor about.
Did someone say cinnamon
weight?
Roll? I'm just kidding.
What? No, I wanted to add something.
Said good roll. I said, I was joking.
Oh, but I wanted to add something, being that you lifted the lid on by saying getting laid. One thing about today's culture is why get married? And you brought that up. And I used to hear it said as, why buy the cow when the milk is free?
Yep. Stop giving away the milk.
Yeah, I've heard that one before, yep.
Rex started it, so don't blame me.
No, that's okay.
Always blame Rex.
Always blame Rex, exactly. And he wasn't being vulgar about it, so that's good. Yeah. But not that I would ever expect that Rex would. I'm not saying that. So, but we do only have about a little more than 5 minutes left. So
we just ate up 2 hours, and we got 5 questions answered? Wow.
Yeah, you know what? That happens on the organic show of Bard Logic Political Talk. That happens sometimes. But something that's going to be more structured tomorrow will be the discussion / interview with Jim Clymer, the vice presidential candidate of the Constitution Party, will be on tomorrow to respond to the questions that were heard during the Democrat and Republican, or should we say the duopoly debate that was held. And so that will definitely be very interesting, but we have less than 5 minutes. So, Rex, if you would.
Go ahead. Okay.
Number 10.
Why is Mark Faber warning that the wealthy may lose up to 50% of their total wealth? Rex, you're the money guy.
I don't know. Why only 50%? That's a pretty optimistic number. And it depends on what you mean by wealthy. There's wealthy and there's wealthy. I mean, you consider somebody wealthy,
right?
He's got $1 million in assets. He's not really wealthy. He's just wealthier than most. But really wealthy, it's like $100 million plus. You know, there's Romney wealthy, and then there's, you know, the small business guy that owns a hardware store in your town wealthy. You know, there's different kinds of wealthy. We have to kind of define that, which they never do. They just say the wealthy. And everybody thinks wealthy is whoever has more money than they do. So
right.
When the Haitians look at the United States, they go, man, all of those lazy bastards are wealthy. So
yeah, right.
It's all relative. You know, that's the crazy thing. But two things I wanted to comment real quick on the education topic. Maybe we'll pick that up next time you have an opening there, Robert. But one is Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad, always talked about thinking rich and thinking poor as opposed to being rich and being poor, where someone would ask, can we afford to do X? And he says the real way wealthy people think is how can we afford to do X? So when Chris said it's the why that's important, it's a very huge thing. And then the other thing is in regards to the education system, you got to look up Dewey. Because Dewey and those socialists, and especially the German school that infiltrated our education system through Teachers College of Columbia, intended to dumb down our education system and turn it into, rather than something which was originally in this country, the first schools taught everything out of one textbook, and that was the Old and New Testament. It was to make you a good person and to make you a better citizen. Then they decided that, no, the education system has to be more utilitarian to serve the corporations and also make people into economic and debt slaves. But the best way to accomplish that was to teach them poor things about math and money, and then to also try to make a man as much unlike his father as possible, which is designed to split the family apart. And that's their intention, and that's what they're doing with the education system. You look at how much money they spend on so-called sex education or anti-bullying or this, that, or the other, versus how much they actually focus on the real basics of knowledge that everybody needs in order to function in the world. And that's just a pretty screwy thing. But right before I finish, and I know you don't have much time, I just wanted to announce to everybody who may be wondering, Sammy Sanford will not be having a show tonight. And if you can't find him on Facebook, it is not because he defriended you. It is because he has taken his pages down. And I'm sure that, you know, if you know Sammy and have his number, you might want to give him a call. Otherwise, there'll probably be an announcement at some point. But obviously, this is in relation to his health situation, and can be kind of taxing to maintain 4 Facebook pages with 5,000 friends and do a daily 3-hour blog talk radio show. So just keep him in your prayers. And there won't be a show tonight, and you can always check in with Bards tomorrow through Thursday, 9 to 11. And also Tex and Rex will be broadcasting both tomorrow and Tuesday at 11 p.m. Eastern following the fake debate and then the real debate. Back to you, Robert.
Well, thank you very much for that information. Yes, definitely, folks, keep Sammy in your thoughts and put out some positive thoughts for him. I know that I will be doing that. I'm just told by my little computer thing here that I only have a minute and a half. And definitely, I'd like to see all the folks here again tomorrow for the Jim Clymer interview. Then, of course, on to the Tex and Rex show following that. So, everyone, have a good night. Take care.
And hope to see you again. And I will end this show as I end every show, and that will be with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. Good night, everyone. Mm-hmm.